Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Oh, good morning, everybody, and good morning, Jamie. I am Glenn the Geek from Lexington, Kentucky.
And I am Jamie Jennings calling from the middle of the ocean. Oh, wait, no, I'm in Phoenix. And it has not stopped raining here in like 2 days. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for December 13th, 2011, episode 292, sponsored by Pfizer Animal Health. Good morning, Horse World.
Welcome to our wet world, Jamie.
Do you know what today is?
No, what?
Yeah, what day is it? Tell me. It's Tuesday!
I can't believe it! I just don't believe it!
Feels like Tuesday. Tuesday has no feel. Monday has a feel. Friday has a feel. Sunday has a feel.
I feel Tuesday and Wednesday.
All right, shut up, the both of you.
Well, everybody, I wanted to say good morning also to Aubrey, who's here like usual, and at least once a week we have to acknowledge her presence. She's in here listening to the show, we know, and a bunch of others we know as well. But did you see the mini donkey picture I posted? Remember I talked about that in the show yesterday, the new mini donkey that's at the farm where we board Beaker?
Rephrase, Glenn, rephrase. It's not a mini donkey. Did you see the picture of the cutest thing ever in the history of the world? Oh my God, it's the cutest thing.
Isn't it?
It has like a wig on or something. It has so much hair.
It has a ton of hair. They're definitely going to have to shave that thing in the summertime because it has a ton of hair. And it was so funny when he came running. It was early in the morning when we were out on Sunday morning. And I went out, and when you open the gate and you call his name, by the way, his name's Napoleon. When you call Napoleon, he comes running at a full speed across the field with his little legs going as fast as they would go. And his little feet are about the size of half dollars. And he comes running across, and half of his body had been in the sunshine and half not. And the half that wasn't was covered in frost.
Aww. Do they have a baby mini donkey blanket?
You just get a dog blanket. Our blanket that we have for Beaker would fit this mini donkey, or for our greyhound would fit this mini donkey.
How old is he?
He's 4 months old.
Oh, just my God. Old.
And I think he was a rescue or something. That the reason she ended up with him is he was a rescue or something that happened to his mom. I don't know quite the whole story, but she ended up having to feed him and get him back to health. And
Is his owner married?
I don't know. I don't know anything about her. And you know, because a lot of people were posting on there that we should take it home. And believe me, I did want to put it in the car and bring it home.
Well, I'm thinking, I ask because, you know, you can maybe pull off, I took him because it was a rescue, but she probably went out and bought it because she saw it and wanted it. Oh, it's a rescue, I swear, honey. It's an orphan. Yeah,
it is the cutest darn thing. I just couldn't believe how hairy it was. The hair must be 3 inches long. And when you actually, if you shaved off all the hair, there's probably not much donkey there.
Oh, it's so cute. Well, thank you for sharing that picture for sure. I mean, oh my gosh, you know, like I like to say, I looked at that picture and I ovulated.
It was so cute too. When we took her out of the gate, I said to Darcy, I said, well, do you have a lead rope? And he said, you don't need a lead rope, just open the gate. And we just opened the gate and the little donkey walked out and he followed us around wherever we went. You don't need a lead rope, he just follows us.
That is going to maybe not pay off so well when it gets older.
I know.
So
I know.
You may want to reconsider the halter breaking now at 4 months as opposed to when they're 4 years old and they're becoming a donkey, because it's still a donkey. The donkey where, you know, when we did the vet work on them, we'd have to snub them to a post in the ground to vaccinate them. They get really bullish. It doesn't matter how little they are.
Yeah. He's going to have an attitude. The nice part about when they have an attitude and they weigh 65 pounds, you can just sort of shush them along.
Kick them. Just kick them.
Jennifer, what's coming up today?
On today's Pfizer Animal Health Tuesday edition, Shauna Koresh is here with her monthly installment of On Target Training, 2 cents worth, and this time it's dealing with horses that won't stand tied. And brief horsey headline hysteria will hit for a few minutes in the center of the show, and then our delightful Victoria from Horse and Country TV is stopping by with the latest, greatest, and most entertaining lists or listings from across the pond.
Thank you, Jennifer. My Daily Winnie goes out to one of the people who posted about their lifetime horse. We had that conversation yesterday, and we had a bunch of comments on there. Nicole Goines posted, my AQHA Mare Poco is my lifetime horse. I bought her as a 3-year-old when I was 16 because I fell in love with her quiet disposition and her willingness to try. Almost 10 years later, and she is still the best horse I could have ever asked for. I trust her more than I trust most people, and she's never given me any reason to doubt her. We've done a lot together, from 4-H to English lessons, from team penning to pack trips out in the middle of the wilderness. I can lean on her, and she never falters. She has taught me a lot in life, and not just about riding. She has a forever home with me and is truly loved. And everybody that posted there, what we talked about yesterday is what they learned from their horse is one of the things that was the recurring theme for that.
Everybody but one of them, Glenn. Did you notice that Lisa Rogers posted on there about her forever horse?
No, I didn't.
It's not what she learned from her horse. She says, you know, you wrote, talking about lifetime horses, what was yours? And she simply wrote, my demon mare.
That'd be the one Jamie tried to ride.
Yeah. The demon mare I was forced to sit upon for about 15 minutes before I realized that I'm on vacation and I don't have to deal with this. So we traded. Like, I have this at home. I don't need this on vacation.
All right, here's yours.
Well, I'm going to have two, and I'm just going to start with this Daily Winnie because, my gosh, it's well-deserved. Canada's Olympic show jumping champion, Eric Lamaze, has been named Rider of the Year. He and the late Hickstead have been named the CBC Sports Athletes for the year of 2011. So, huge honor. He even goes on to say, it was an honor to receive this award, which is extremely important to me because it's voted on by the riders, said Lamaze, who was visibly moved during the presentation. So, congrats to Eric Lamaze and the late, great Hickstead for winning Athlete of the Year. And just because I did that story, I'm currently wearing the Rhonda Crabtree's Hickstead armband that she sent me.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
I'm wearing it right now. I'm by my computer. And I put it on when I do Hickstead stories. Okay, so my next one, this is an exciting, exciting moment. Don Deems posted it, but since I'm already friends with Rapid Redo on Facebook, we're like totally BFF. I knew already that Rapid Redo is entered at Laurel Park today in the sixth race, which will go off, I think it's Eastern time, around 2:55 p.m. Now, this horse, Rapid Redo, is vying for a very huge record. This horse, Rapid Redo, has won 18 in a row. 18 races in a row, and 19 wins. It would be 19 wins in 1 year. if he wins today. That ties Citation's record. Okay, Citation, how long ago was that? Like 100 years? I mean, my gosh. So Rapid Redo trying to tie Citation's record of 19 wins in one calendar year. Now, she says that the daily racing form, DRF.com, is going to be showing the race live on their website. So you may want to check that out around 2:55 p.m., I think, Eastern, Laurel Park, Rapid Redo, going for Citation's record. Holy cow.
And I am on their website right now, and it does look like they have a video preview of the race of the day, which is that race. I'm not seeing anything about it being live, but it might be on there. So check if you want to go take a closer look at DRF.com. So let's hope that he actually, does well today and break or tie up the record.
Now, Jennifer is over here posting ferociously on my chat, saying that the races are being investigated by stewards because scratches have been common features during the winning streak and people have been scratching. I'm telling you, it's simply because they don't want to run against them. So the stewards can do all of the research they want, and if I'm proven wrong, then I'll just eat it. But for the most part, I'm pretty sure that just nobody wants to run against them and lose.
So what are they – they're trying to say that that – the Rapid Redo people are convincing people to pull out?
They don't make any outward. It's a particular race that they ran that apparently everybody in the backstretch was going, oh, the two horses that were the next best odds to him were going to scratch. And they did. But I think it's just because the rumor mill was moving at a rapid pace on the backstretch. I believe it was it at Mountaineer that he ran last? And it was going
rumors.
Yeah.
Rumors
on
the backstretch of a race.
No,
never
have that. It was Charlestown they was running. Never have those. But I appreciate the fact that at least they made the effort to look into it because it's not unheard of that horses go, oh gee, I'm not going to run against him, you know. But and they put the statistic in there that 30% of the horses that were scheduled to run against him scratched. But they also don't tell you what the national average is. So for all we know, the national average might be 29% of any given horse in scratch.
He hasn't been running in grade one races either. I mean, at the lower level races, they're scratching all the time, all over the place.
Yeah.
It's because they're all lame.
Plus, as Jamie said, you don't want your horse to get beat. So if you think your horse is going to get beat, you might pull him and run a race where you think he's going to win.
Yeah.
Happens all the time, too. Yeah.
So. Yep. Well, it's definitely... I know, we are. We pull for the champions. I don't care what you say, Jennifer. We're going to keep it positive over here. Salacious
the headline.
News.
I thought, oh, yeah, they're going to beat up on Rapid Redo a little bit.
Salacious gossip from the backstretch.
Speaking of racing in the backstretch, there's one little jockey that's retiring after a very sordid career.
Oh, my gosh.
Story.
Yeah, Patrick Valenzuela formerly decided this past Friday to end his career. Now, while he was known as one of the best, he was also one of the most controversial. Actually, his career almost ended a couple of times because of suspensions and doing some things that he probably shouldn't have been doing. Now, he did win 4,333 races. 4,333 races.
That's a lot of races.
It's a lot of races to win. Now, they're saying he might not get first vote into the Hall of Fame because of his sordid career, but the man's horses earned $163.8 million in his career. And then $5.8 million of that came from this year. Now, Pat Valenzuela is 49 years old. 49 years old. The boy has been doing it a long time. He said he was having a hard time finally making weight, and he had a gallbladder operation last month, and it opened his eyes to the abuse his body has taken over the years. He says, I'm almost 50, and my health is more important now. But again, he won 7 Breeders' Cup races, 15 riding titles at California Tracks. He won the Kentucky Derby in 1989 aboard Sunday Silence. And, of course, Sunday Silence went on to win the Preakness and then lose the Belmont by a nose to Easy Goer. So definitely a great jockey, definitely controversial, and we'll see what happens when the vote comes up to the Hall of Fame.
He's controversial because of his drug problem. He's had a drug problem over the years. He's been in rehab several times. He got suspended from California for drugs, and mm-hmm. you know, that's the reason that he's had so much trouble. So when he says the gallbladder operation that, you know, has made him realize the abuse his body has taken, that's not just from racing. I think it's from
yeah, racing. Seriously.
A little bit of both.
Yeah.
Hey, it's also that time of year when the Winter Equestrian Festival starts in Wellington. They have put $25 million in upgrades into the showgrounds down there, including a new road, which it really needed. And it's that's at the 500-acre Palm Beach International Equestrian Center. They've also put in some high-grade footing into the show rings. They really were trying to attract more top-rank riders from around the world. And to do that, they have also increased their sponsorship by 20% this year, and they've gone in prize money from $6 million to $6.5 million. Now, this is a 12-week festival. It's the longest-running equestrian festival and show like it of its kind in the world, and they expect more than 250,000 people to attend. And last year they had 5,000 horses and 6,700 riders, trainers and owners, and this year they're expecting to increase that by 20%. So it's a big show. And you know, I was down there 2 years ago for a little bit. And it is a beautiful place. I mean, palm trees everywhere. It's southern Florida. You know, it's just beautiful. It's Palm Beach. You know, it's nice.
Yeah, it's pretty fancy down there. Hey, good news for you. You know, people always use therapy dogs. Well, there's a family that uses Rosie in New Edmond, Oklahoma. A family uses a horse named Rosie. She's a miniature horse, and she's used for therapy for their son that has Asperger's syndrome. And apparently, people have been complaining about Rosie living on a small lot within city limits. Again, this is a therapy horse, and you've got, apparently, they complained enough to say that Rosie's residency in that house was in jeopardy because they had so many complaints. And apparently this was their Christmas present from about 6 months ago. So they had to go and contact an attorney. The ordinance basically said that their lot was too small for the horse. But then they just passed a new ordinance in Oklahoma that standards pertaining to miniature horses for therapeutic purposes is okay, and Rosie is now officially legal. Now, the good news, they were actually going to move because they had to have this horse. Apparently, their son, Stephen, used to have, that what she says, no interest in going outside. He would sit down in front of the house. They tried millions of things. Well, now, apparently, since Rosie is part of their family, Stephen made huge improvements. He comes out of his shell. He's now talking and taking responsibilities for his actions. He remembers every night to feed her. He goes out and he brushes her. And apparently, she's just such a big part of the family. So the good news is they get to stay in their house. The really good news is they were like, we're not getting rid of our horse. We'll just move. And how many people do that? You know, it's like, oh, just put in a rescue. But they were, this is part of their family.
This is for Edmond, Oklahoma.
Yay!
They deserve,
way to make it happen.
Yeah, that's terrific. You know, and more now, especially miniature horses, are being recognized as therapy animals, whether they're entering hospitals or, you know, children's homes or whatever. They're being recognized more and more, and good for them. That's great. I have a donkey, mini donkey, that'd probably be good for that. Loves people. You don't need to leave. Hey, the early reviews are coming in, Jamie, for War Horse, all the people getting the previewings of it. And if you have seen War Horse, if you're a horse person that's seen War Horse, we would like to hear what you think about it. Give us a call at 347-637-3238. I know Jamie and I are really looking forward to going to see it at Christmas time. Well, the early reviews, some of them, I just have a couple of them here for you. And these are not horse people. This was off of a general site. It says, war movie plus horse movie equals constant crying. Seriously, if you have a soul, you will be crying the entire time. But don't let that scare you away. It's a really good kind of cry. and only a fantastic film can bring about. The story is constantly enthralling, and the characters, including the animals, are deep and layered. The acting is superb. Just bring your tissue box. So you better bring two, Jamie. Just bring two tissue boxes.
You know, when I watched the preview, I cried, Glenn. I mean, that movie. And what's really cool is we're going to Oklahoma for Christmas, and I was informed that because the family has so many obligations, that we will not be having our Christmas till the 26th. And, you know, typically that would be like, oh, well, how can we not celebrate Christmas on Christmas Day? I was like, booyah, we're going to see the movie on opening day. I'm like, Christmas can wait. War Horse comes out.
No, that's what I was telling Jennifer, too. I was trying to tell Jennifer that as well. Also, here's just a couple other reviews. Cynics, I thought this one was interesting. Cynics will tear this film to shreds. It's visually inconsistent and sentimental to the point of near hilarity. But Spielberg got the better of me. I'm in love with this unrelentingly romantic, occasionally amazing epic. So there's a guy, and I will tell you that Cynics, there were as many people on this page that I was looking at Rotten Tomatoes. I don't know if you've ever been to Rotten Tomatoes, but that's the place to go if you want to see movie reviews. There was people on Rotten Tomatoes just ripping the film to shreds, and part of it was that it was too sappy, that Spielberg had made it so sappy that it was over-the-top sappy with the music and the whole thing. And there were a couple complaints about it having too many plots in one movie, having too many subplots. But those are all people, again, that aren't horse people, so I'd love to hear from somebody who is a horse person and get their review, non-spoiler review, let's put it that way, non-spoiler review.
That movie, I find it amazing that nobody has, okay, please, nobody do it, but it hasn't been spoiled for me yet. I still haven't found out what's going to happen, and I'm trying to hold off, so that's why I don't go and read reviews, because I know I'm going to watch it anyway. I'll read reviews of something if I'm like, should I go see that, or should I not? But I don't want to know. I don't want to know. I'm going to see it anyway. Not like
well,
a review's going to be like, oh, I think I will go see that.
They did say to keep the PG rating that he really made an effort. I mean, it's war. It's World War I, which was a horrible war, like any war. But he really made an effort to have it not be a blood and guts movie. So I'm sure you saw Saving Private Ryan. You know, it's completely different from that. It's not a blood and guts movie, but yet he still gets the point across about war. So, you know, Private Ryan was hard to watch in some places. And
that's just funny because that is my husband's favorite movie of all time.
It was good. I've seen it a couple times. It was a good movie.
Well, I'll tell you a secret. He's in the room right now, so I can tell you, and he'll just stop me. I have never seen my husband cry. He did not cry at our wedding. He did not cry. I mean, I've never seen him cry. And we're watching Saving Private Ryan, which he has seen about 150 times. And the end of the movie comes up, and you know, I'm not going to, if you haven't seen it, the end of the movie where they're doing the thing, and then I look over, and tears are running down his face.
I got to tell you, I'm with him. I cry at that movie every time, too. If you don't cry at the end of Private Ryan, you're a stone.
Oh, but he is a stone. Typically. Oh, my gosh, it was amazing. I was like, are you crying? Are you crying? Because, of course, I was crying.
But like, I tell you what, Private Ryan is different. It's different than Schindler's List. Schindler's List I just found disturbing the whole way through it. I didn't cry at Schindler's List. I think Schindler's List is one of those movies that he made that, you know, really gets the point across. And it just, you're just disturbed through the whole thing. And for about 2 months after.
Yeah, but that movie was real.
I know. And then shooting it in black and white and the whole thing. But anyway, so those are some of the early
reviews
that are in.
Oh, you're
going to
make me cry talking about it. Oh, my God.
We're moving on now. Happy story. I have a happy story. How about that? We'll go to a happy story
please.
Next. Remember when we were out in Norco, a couple of the people we met were part of the volunteer rescue units that would go out and rescue hikers and things like that. Well, in Palm Springs, 2 days ago, they needed to call into action the Palm Springs Mounted Police Search and Rescue Unit because they had a hiker that was lost on his hike there, and they went out and they found the guy. It took him about an hour, and they actually found the lost hiker. It was good physical condition, and they got him home safely. So that this particular mounted unit in Palm Springs was established in 1949, and actually is done through community donations. That's their only source of funding. So good job.
Oh,
to that.
But excuse me. Really, I mean, if you're going to get lost somewhere, Palm Springs is the place to do it.
Yeah,
I mean,
but you got to admit, there's a lot of desert around Palm Springs, and there's a hill.
Yeah. But if you can't figure out which way is Palm Springs, okay, if you are like, well, I was just driving to Norco, California from Phoenix, and you're in nothing, and all of a sudden it's like you're in Vegas. The palm trees and the casino and all the lights and all the civilization, and then you go back to nothing. So if you're hiking through Palm Springs and you get lost, how can you just climb to the top of a hill and find the palm trees? It shouldn't be that hard. Jeez, no wonder it took an hour to find them. They're like, yeah, well, apparently you're
that
just over the hill.
Yeah, that could have been in somebody rich person's back fenced-in backyard. He got lost in. Who knows?
Exactly. It's like somebody's 70-acre cattle spread. You know, it's like, oh no, yeah, I see some cows. Yeah, okay, we know where you are. You're at the Johnsons. We'll come and get you. Not a bad place to get lost.
No. I always, and this shows you what I know about California and geography, I always thought Palm Springs was along the coast, like Malibu and stuff. I didn't realize it was that far inland.
That's Palm Springs. There are, what's the palm something that's really ritzy on the coast of California? Is there a Palmdale?
Palm Beach?
Palm Beach. Palm Beach. There you go. Yeah, Palm Springs is actually in the middle of the state. It's like you go, you're kind of halfway between LA and the border when you hit Palm Springs. So, and it's a really interesting place to drive through, but thank God they have it because I was almost out of gas on the way home from Norco. So I was like, okay, make it to Palm Springs. I could see it in the distance. And my truck, of course, diesel is on like 2 miles. You have 2 miles left. You better get gas. I'm like, okay, I'm almost to Palm Springs.
You are such a horse person. You are such a horse girl. This drives me crazy about my wife leaving it go down to 2 miles left before she gets gas. I think it's every horse girl does that, and it's just to drive us husbands crazy.
I hate it myself, but it's like I try to wean it off gas. It's like if I can just get it low enough, eventually I can wean it off.
Does it drive your husband crazy when you do it, too, and he gets in the truck and it's empty?
Yeah, well, you know what? I pretty much drive mine, and he drives his because I would do that to his car. Because I've got the big truck, he's got the fancy Audi, and I mean, I'm sure enough times have gone by where he realized that he probably didn't even have enough gas to get to work. So I drive my truck now. Pretty much been.
I'm gonna say this for all the horse husbands out there: we hate you people when you do that. Just hate it.
Yeah.
Get in the car and it's empty and I'm going, I'm in a hurry and I got to get someplace and I got an appointment and I didn't have time to get gas and I got to get gas now. That's the time, you know, we've been married 25 years and I get very, very few times do I ever get mad about almost anything. But I get mad at my wife very few times, except when I'm out of gas and I get in the car and I'm in a hurry. That's,
that's when you take her car. I mean, come on, that's why you have two cars.
What are you kidding? Her car is more empty than my car, usually.
Hey, Glenn.
Anyway, pet peeve.
Let's
just
say this. Your lack of planning does not create a problem in my life. If you didn't plan that gas in your car, that's not my problem.
Yeah, leave earlier, Glenn, and you'll have time to do whatever. And you will not be in a hurry, and you'll have time to get gas.
I should just know, as a husband, that if Jennifer used my car, it's going to be out of gas, and I should plan for that.
That's what we do. I mean, I think that, I love it, but if I run a car out of gas and Chad then drives it, he will then pay to put gas in it. It's a great system.
That's right.
Get Chad back
on
here. I need an ally.
No, he's not allowed on anymore.
Apparently, causes
not in this
female world.
Not in this discussion. Yeah, you're living in the ladies' world. So, but I want to direct you right now, though, to Facebook. because you, Tina, you're right. Your little guy has some competition. I would like you all to meet Pebbles the Wonder Donkey.
That looks like a stuffed animal.
Oh, my God, that's the cutest thing I've ever seen, and it is wearing a dog blanket. Oh, it's so cute.
What it is, for those that can't see it, it's a picture to... It's Pebbles the Wonder Donkey, and he's a mini donkey, just like the one I put a picture of. But, boy, is he cute, and he's wearing a little tiny dog blanket. That's very single.
Oh, it's so cute. And then Aubrey posted underneath that, that the donkey-tood must be hereditary, Jamie. Ours has to be snubbed to a post for shots as well. The vet actually has to hide while I catch Stanley and tie him up, or he'd start running and we'd never get near him. The vet has dubbed him Stanley Steamer, and he's not nearly as cute as Napoleon. Oh, that's funny. Yeah, they smell the vet coming. They would. I mean, I've been kicked by big horses, but I don't think it ever hurt as bad as when I was kicked by the miniature donkey. As I'm trying to wrestle it, jump on its back and wrestle it over towards the hitching post at the clinic, and this sucker is just, he's run away. He just ran away. He turned and ran, and whoever was on the end of the line went with him. So, no trouble.
Well, let's take a break for our commercial, and we're going to be back with our first guest. Shona Koresh is here today, our trainer and resident trainer here, and her and Jennifer are going to have a conversation with the two trainers together, because you know what, Jamie and I, we're not as good as trainers as they are, so we let them talk training, so it reduces the embarrassment level. Jamie's definitely better than me, but we just let the professionals talk. And they're going to talk today about a thing that's common with some horses, and that is they won't tie. You just can't get them
Glenn,
to tie. Yeah.
I understand that you are I just don't do clicker training, and that's what Shauna specializes in. So it is definitely a moment for all of us to sit back and learn. Jennifer, however, is incredibly interested in clicker training and loves to do it. So that's why Jennifer takes over, because I would sound like an idiot talking about clicker training, and so would you. So that is why we hand it over to Jennifer to let her do it. And don't sell yourself short, Glenn.
Jamie, I was trying to make myself feel better by throwing you into my pile of incompetence.
Yeah,
so,
I don't want to be in that pile. Sorry. You can't throw me into it. Oh, let me go ahead and do the commercial before you keep getting yourself in trouble. And I would like to let you know that Pfizer, Glenn, did you know this? Pfizer just opened a new ginormous equine research center in Michigan where they are going to plan on developing new horse vaccines and medicines. I love to say the name of the city in Michigan. It's in Kalamazoo, Michigan. And
I love
it is,
Kalamazoo.
I've never been there, but I like the sound of it. But apparently, $7 million investment in the facilities, 24,000 square feet, and hopefully, you know, Pfizer invest more than $300 million annually in R&D, research and development, across four continents. So this is going to be an awesome place. I mean, you can imagine it's going to bring jobs to Kalamazoo, Michigan, and it's a beautiful facility. It looks like a Morton barn or something. But maybe they're going to start addressing all these new random diseases that have come out and the deworming problem that we're having with resistance to deworming. So cool. For Pfizer, let me go ahead and do the commercial, or you want to do it?
You can do it.
Okay. Pfizer Animal Health is the leading manufacturer of animal health products in North America and international markets, like I said, four continents. Pfizer Animal Health's tried and true line of vaccines include West Nile Innovator, the first vaccine to help protect against equine West Nile virus, Innovator combination vaccines, the FluVac and Innovator vaccine lines, and many other quality products. At Pfizer Animal Health, we're passionate about the health and wellness of horses and all animals. For more information about Pfizer Animal Health products, visit PfizerAnimalHealth.com. And they're also reintroducing Quest Plus, Gel dewormer. Quest Plus has been on back order and unavailable to horse owners and veterinarians for quite some time, but the product is now back on the market just in time for your fall/winter deworming to help protect horses against the tapeworm threat as well as other serious internal parasites. For more information on Quest and Quest Plus, visit questhorse.com.
Hey, did you mention their new video channel, the one that has the their veterinarians on call show on it? Did you mention that?
No, I didn't.
They have launched on YouTube now season one of their Veterinarians on Call show, and this is basically veterinarians for large animals. And Jennifer said that she watched part of episode one of this show, and that you, Jamie, would love it, and that our listeners would love it, but I'm not allowed to watch it because I wouldn't be able to eat lunch ever. So if you want a really good veterinarian show that you guys seem to like all the gory, gross stuff, then go to youtube.com/veterinariansoncall. And that's Pfizer Animal Health launches that on YouTube. So you can check that out as well. Hey, I got to give a shout-out to Michelle Bergeron here. My friend down from Louisiana says, I am with you, Glenn. I start looking for a gas station when I'm down to a quarter of a tank. When I'm pulling my trailer, I'm terrified of getting stuck in the side of the road with no gas. Michelle, I knew I liked you for a reason. You go, girl.
Keep kissing your butt. Michelle, come on. Be realistic. Do you ever just, what I do is I forget. I just forget it needs gas, and all of a sudden it's like, ding, 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 ding. Oh, my God, you have no gas. Pull over. So that's really what happens to me. I just forget that it needs it. Like I said, if you just, you can just wean it off, you know. That's what I try to do.
Yeah, with your monster truck that eats diesel by the 55-gallon drum, I don't think so.
Yeah, it hasn't worked yet. I'll let you know. I'll keep you up to date on the progress.
And what is it with diesel? You know, 10, 15 years ago when we had our big diesel truck, diesel was cheaper than gas. It used to be like 20 cents cheaper than gas. And now it's...
I know.
Oh, that's...
And that's when I bought my truck. My last truck was when diesel was cheaper. But apparently they keep telling me something about supply and demand in the European markets or whatever. I don't care, though. I'm not European. I just want my diesel, and I want it cheaper than gas. It takes less work to make it, apparently. Ugh, it's frustrating.
Well, we have our guest on here, and let's say hello to her here. And we have Shauna Koresh on with us from On Target Training. Good morning, Shauna.
Well, good morning, Glenn. Good morning, Jackie. How are you guys?
Well, thank you so much.
Oh, Jamie, sorry. It's early here.
No worries.
Well, I know because I heard while we were out there, we just got back from our trip to Norco, that you have been to Norco before.
I have. I used to take my, when I had a Freightliner, I would take the Freightliner in there because that's where you had to go for service around here. So in Southern California. So I have been to Norco, and I heard you got to be paraded around.
Yeah, we had a great time when we were in Norco. What an interesting little town, huh?
Yeah, it really is. It's full of, just different. It is an interesting little town.
Well, I know that you and Jennifer are going to talk training today, but all the guests that have been coming on, we've been asking them about the holidays. Is there a specific holiday that you can remember, a Christmas day that had a horsey significance to you that you'll never forget? Or do you try and avoid the horses on Christmas Day and just do non-horsey things?
I think I tend to... have been, you know, I would go away, like a lot of times when I was back east and had the farm, I would go away at Christmas time. So your biggest thing at Christmas was getting the people to take care of the horses. So that would be the biggest part.
Right.
Because it was more of a traveling to see family when I was back east. And then, I don't have a particularly horsey Christmas day I can think of.
Okay, cool. All right, well, let's have Jennifer take over here and talk a little bit about horses that just won't tie.
Okay, thank you, Glenn and Jamie.
My pleasure.
So today we're going to chit-chat a little bit. This question was prompted by out at the barn, we have a couple of horses who are chronically yanking the cross ties or whatever kind of tie off the wall and sometimes bringing the whole wall down with them out at the barn. So, and most of the people that I know of out there, they just deal with it. It's like, oh, well, he broke it again. Like, really? You could probably train the horse and maybe make this better. But then maybe they don't know how to train a horse to tie. Because what exactly do you do? And that's kind of what prompted this discussion. So from the operant conditioning on-target training point of view, where does one start with when it comes to a horse that you tie him up and then he decides in the blink of an eye to take the barn down? Where do you start?
Well, the first thing to always consider is if any behavior is increasing in frequency or happening with consistency, something in the environment, something that's involved with that is reinforcing it. So they don't do it just because there's no reason for it. There's something, it's serving them in one way, shape, or form.
No. They do it to make us angry. We all know that. They just do it specifically to see us cringe and be angry and have to go to the tax store and buy more crop ties.
To wreck our stuff and be spiteful.
Right. No, that's not it?
That's not quite it, no. So it kind of, a lot of times, it goes back to a fear-based thing. Because usually when they're doing that, it is fear-based. And let's also consider when they break the stuff, it works. They get reinforced because they get what they wanted, and that is to not be attached anymore. And sometimes the horses I've seen will just break it and stand there. Like, okay, I'm good. I'm not tied anymore. But a lot of times they take it and then they're gone. You know, you got to go chase them down. So
yeah.
So they're getting they are getting reinforced because their issue is working. So, you know, the best thing I try to do is, the first thing I do is I want to teach them how to stand still and how to be tied. And this would also be the same if I have a young horse who doesn't know about being tied, you know, because that can also be very fearful for a young horse for the first time. And frankly, a lot of these tying issues may come from this early tying thing. So the first thing I do, and I would teach a bad tire to teach like a new tire. So I would basically go back to, you know, getting them back in that area and just standing there and reinforcing them. And also if there's any trigger, if you can find any trigger, if you know it's whenever somebody opens, you know, this door that's from the tack room, or it's whenever I pull out the clippers, or it's whenever I'm rubbing their back leg, whatever, if you do see a trigger, that even helps because you can then kind of work really specifically on whatever is causing them to have this reaction.
Right. If you have a horse that has a trigger, let's say, for example, good old Thunder is going to come back into the conversation.
Good. I like Thunder.
Thunder is our test dummy. Thunder invariably breaks his cross tie or his short racking tie, whether he's tied to a wall or a cross tie. He breaks it any time someone walks into the barn aisle and he hears them walking down the aisle. Do I deal with the tying issue first, or do I start with the trigger first? Which one do I do first?
Deal with the trigger first.
Okay.
Because in that situation, if you know a trigger, I mean, you know it's this somehow, he can't see the people behind him or whatever, and it spooks him, the pulling from the cross ties, the tying issue, is actually a symptom of the fear that is related to whatever is triggering him. So, I mean, and sometimes it seems really random, but if you know a trigger like that, so if you deal with the issue and get him comfortable with people coming behind him and standing and just being relaxed with that, or teaching him that people walking behind you is a good thing, it will, the tying issue will become a moot point because the fear that triggers it will be gone. So that's an easy desensitization, despooking sort of process where you just, I wouldn't cross time at first. I'd put him in a way, I do everything I can to set him up for success. And if that means first turn them out for a little bit, you know, or lunge them or put them in a round pen or do something first before you take them to the cross ties, to help them to be settled, when they're more relaxed, they're a little more tired, they have a tendency to have less energy and to be less concerned, you know, and looking around. So I would do whatever I could to set them up for success. But then I would start, instead of tying them right off the bat, I would just stand with just holding him or having somebody hold him, whichever it would be, and then having somebody walk up from the back. and or whatever, you know, I'm kind of saying the trigger is they're walking down the barn aisle, kind of coming behind them. So that's
a
dog
bark or something. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So this is right. So this is my scenario in my head. I'm thinking for thunder. So I would then have somebody walking down the barn aisle, but instead of him being able to break and get loose from things, he's attached to me, and the worst thing he'll probably do is spin around to see the person. But ideally what you're going to do is with the use of a target, I mean, you can do it without a target, but a target would make it even more successful because I'd have them, and once they know to touch their nose to a target, it's used for a lot of situations where, like, you know, they're looking at a trailer and they go, I don't really want a trailer load. But they see the target and they go, ooh, but I really like the target. Okay, I'll get a little closer to the trailer. And there you start that process. They make a decision for the target because it has a strong positive reinforcement history for them. So a lot of times using the target in a situation with something, and I do use it through the tying, but, you know, let's say for Thunder and his somebody approaching him, I have the target. And a lot of times what happens, he looks at the target and he's so focused on the target because there's so much good history with the target, and he loves the target, and the target equals good things. A lot of times, other things just become an incidental because he's like, I'm all about the targeting. I know what to do with the targeting. I have lots of success here. So that, a lot of times, take his mind off it a little bit.
We're in this case, we're going to use the aisleway for Thunder.
Mm-hmm.
Standing in the aisleway, target. Thunder understands touching the target.
Mm-hmm.
Do I ask Thunder to touch the target before the trigger happens, during that process, or after?
I would touch him. I would ask him to do it, and I would set it up as a scenario if you can
right.
possibly do that. You know, so I have, you know, Janie sitting in the corner, and you're going, okay, when I say come, I would first have him touching the target. So he's kind of in the mindset of, oh, I'm doing this thing that I love. So he kind of, his mindset has shifted from suspicion and I hate the cross ties, I have to get out the cross ties at some point. Instead of having him in that suspicious, I don't want to, the no defensive attitude, you get him into the, oh, I love this. This is good. This is a safe place. And so I start with that and then have the person come out. And if it's early on, I would reinforce him when the person just leaves, just comes out, you know, for that initial point where it's just starting to happen. Because a lot of times they're technically called precursors where he starts realizing, okay, that person's about to approach. But as soon as they come out and they're still, you know, they're still way back there, that's the most success you're going to have, usually, you know. So if I know, like, as soon as he gets to 15 feet, he bolts, he's gone. At 20 feet, I'm going to reinforce him because you know he's aware of her at this point. I'm going to reinforce him and then have the person come a little bit closer, reinforce him a little bit closer, reinforce him, and then start again. So then have them walk, maybe come out and walk up to 15 feet within him where that's kind of like his breaking threshold and reinforce him for his good decision. And reinforce him, and then have the person come up, you know, and continue to walk on. And then I do it again and get a little bit closer, reinforcing the good approximations. It's going to, what I found is a lot of, because this is usually a fear-based thing, when you have fear-based issues, when you use a positive reinforcement to overcome them, they overcome them pretty fast. I break it down all to these little tiny steps. So people kind of can process in their head what steps they might need to go through. But it usually, the fear-based things, they don't want to be fearful. And when they have a place where they can get rid of it, they tend to want to, you know, and it settles right down. But through traditional training, we don't really bring them to a safe place or we don't put something in it for them that helps them to want to overcome it. You know, by utilizing foods and using positive reinforcement, something they want and desire, you're giving them a reason to go, ooh, I got to make a decision, and I really want to be good. I really want to get the reinforcement, you know?
Yeah.
So traditional training, we get after them a little bit, or we,
yeah,
you know,
right,
we try to
yeah.
correct them, which, and that can add to their fear
yeah.
already.
Yeah.
Does that
yeah,
make
a
sense?
Lot of horses would just assume you got after them than have to deal with, oh, I got to tie it up. So
yeah.
we've gotten Thunder to the point now. He'll stand in the aisleway where the cross ties are
uh-huh.
with somebody holding him, and we can get Jamie to jump up out of the corner and run down the aisleway, and he hangs out there and touches his target.
Mm-hmm.
What are markers that are going to tell us, the inexperienced junior on-target training trainers, tell us that our horse is ready to start being tied while we do this? Where do
okay.
we go? When do we make that jump from person standing to tied, and how do we do it?
Okay, then when you see, and the things you're looking for is a total comfort with that person walking down the aisle. So that means you need to watch that body language that's going to tell you that. You know, when the person walks down the aisle, does his head raise up and the ears get all, you know, kind of, you know, you can just see that. Their head raises up, their eyes get big. You can just see tension that comes in all of that. And if you're still seeing that, that means they're making the right choice, but they're not really comfortable with the whole situation yet. So I want to see the head stays relaxed, the eyes stay soft, the mouth stays soft, the muscles stay, you know, everything about the horse says, I don't really care about this person walking down the aisle anymore. And when you see that, then you're ready to move to the next stage. But if you're still seeing the tension come in, and then he makes a choice and comes back to relax, you're on the right path, but he still needs more time to get really relaxed about it, you know, because he, once you add in, it's when you add in the cross ties now, it's a different ball game. So you really need to make sure we're solid and good and have a good reinforcement history with that person coming down the aisle. So a good association. So person coming down the aisle, good things, relaxed, calm, I like it, I'm not worried about it. Because any worry about it is going to just be compounded once you put them back to the cross ties and they feel restrained. So, okay, so now we see, let's say we see the head's down, the head's relaxed, they don't even seem to look at the person. Maybe one ear goes back, like, oh, yeah, I hear they're coming. But then they go back to all attention forward, no big deal, I don't care. When we get to this point, then we're ready to go towards the cross ties. But because they can be, you know, like sometimes horses that are being clipped, they're completely fine when you're loose, but as soon as they're on the cross tie, they're like, oh, no, I'm not, I can't, I'm trapped. So the next thing I would do is I would attach one side of the cross tie and the other on the lead rope. So you still kind of can, one, if they get really wound up again and they get worried about things, you still can, you're not letting them get the success of breaking the cross tie. You still have a little bit of, you know, I mean, sure, they could totally run, but you can kind of move around with them where they're still sort of attached, but they're not, they have enough leeway they can move around to feel a little bit of freedom. So it's kind of a compromise. You're kind of moving towards the more restrained situation. So I'd stand kind of on the other side of them, being the other cross tie, but it's a lead rope where you can give with them and walk with them a little bit if you need to. So they're not getting reinforced by that, removing themselves from the cross tie. So then I would repeat the same process. So one side's cross tie, the other side, I'm kind of being the other moving cross tie, if you will.
Yeah.
And so I'll stand there like a, just being like a cross tie, but if everything goes haywire, I can kind of move around, set them, get the target, you know, do the whole thing again. But so what I would then do is have Jamie come out again, and I would go through the same little process. Have, you know, start, touch the target while you're kind of being pseudo cross tied, and look for that relaxation. Most often at this point, you may see a little bit of raising, but you'll see him sink right back into that comfort level. Because they're going, okay, I know my new drill, and I like my new drill. Okay, so you go through the same processes, so you see them doing absolutely nothing when, you know, when the person walks down the aisle. When you see that, then you're ready to do the second cross tie. And I would still then, and as you are ready to do the, you know, the here comes the person, I would do the same process. I would use a target first and have them focusing on the target, and then start, you know, as the person can walk all the way up, again, you want to fade the target out of this. Maybe I haven't even said this yet. You want to eventually fade the target out of each of these scenarios because down the road, you just want them to cross tie. You're not going to be standing there with all these things. You want them to just to get over their fear. You know, you're not
sorry,
like,
I can't groom my horse. I don't have my target. Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, you're looking like a one-man band, you know, like you've got all these things going on. So then as you start to fade the cross tie, and the person can then walk down the aisle and just stand there, you can reinforce. You're still being the person at the head. You still have the cross tie or the target if you need to lift it up and say, target, remember? But mostly at this point, they're probably going to be no big deal. So now you've reestablished, they're kind of like scales that were out of whack. So there's a lot of weight on the side of the scale that said, get out of the cross ties. So it's like, yeah, this is what I want to do. This is the strong thing to do. But what we've done is by each and every increment of training, we put more and more and more and more weight on the side of the scale that says I want to make the right choice as opposed to what for us is the wrong choice. And as
they get to that point where the choice that we want is the choice that they like because they value the reward or the potential reward more than they do the old reward, which was pulling the cross tie and not feeling trapped.
And right, and getting to get away from that situation. Because really, at that point, they're going, yeah, it is worth all your corrections. It is worth hurting my head by jamming around and pulling these things. It's better than standing there and dealing with whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So, right, we've taught them a new decision. And the best way you can teach them to do anything is to teach them to make that decision. So it means you need to give them a little bit of leeway at first to make that decision. And that's why we start with the lead rope first, because they do have some decision-making, you know, and until you start to see them make the right decision, then you move up to a little more, you know, restraint. They make the right decision, then you move up to more. But when they're making that decision, it is solid, you know. Then they're choosing to do it, and that makes the best potential there. And then once they get over the fear, like I said, it's not like they want to go around fearful. I mean, that's not, you know, that comes out of an instinct to need to run or get away or feeling fearful of things, but that's not something they want to. And as soon as you start to deal with, you know, doing like despooking work, doing this kind of work, which is essentially a despooking, you know, desensitizing exercise, you see them settle right in and you'll see them kind of blossom, because they don't want to feel that worried about it, but they do for, you know, whatever thing we've missed in the training we've created or let this situation create itself. So yeah. It's really not that hard to do. And if I'm...
Wait a minute. It's not that hard to do for you. For those of us out here trying to do this all by our little lonesome, it's a little harder than that. That's why we have you on to give us advice.
And you know what, though? The principles behind this are so strong, because these are proven behavior principles. I didn't make it up. It's not, you know, I've just learned to break it down and help people to understand it and put it into use. But these principles that are in effect are going to work for you. I mean, I get people all the time that go, it's amazing, he's so smart, I did, you know. So it really can work for you. It just, but sometimes we get a little bit lost what path to take. And I'm always here to help people and to help answer questions and get that success. But it really, the system starts working for itself. So it's not like you have to go to battle with them. You just kind of wait and let them make decisions. You've got a little bit of time where you go, I'm just going to stand here and let you process and let you figure it out. You know, and as they start, and using a clicker definitely helps in this situation, because you can pinpoint the moment in time, like, you know, because the clicker or whatever signal you want to use to tell them yes, it bookmarks that point in time. So let's say, okay, heads up, eyes are big, they're looking really fearful, you know, everything looks really stiff, and for a second they soften and come down just a little bit. With a click, you can go, yes, that's the behavior I'm looking for. Right. And they remember what behavior earned them a click. So then they start going, oh, every
I'll
time.
Try that again.
Yeah, exactly. They go, how did I get that food? And so they go, oh, it's lowering my head. And pretty soon they have their head on the ground. You know, I mean, you're saying lift your head up.
Yeah.
Because they start
So, Shauna, remind our listeners where they can go to ask more questions when we as humans foul this up.
Well, you can go to ShaunaKarish.com. But a great place to go is if you go to AskShauna.com, it's right to a question. It brings you right to a question page where you can submit a question and I address it. And I'm going to reinstate my I was doing teleseminars, and then I got where I was posting it on the blog. But I kind of realized I'm getting so many questions these days that I can deal with a lot more if I do a teleseminar. You know, I can sit and talk about these things. So it's a great place to go, and I can address the questions. And you could, if you go to the blog, which is on ShaunaKarish.com, I've addressed a lot of questions there. So there's a search bar. There's a lot of resources there to help people through it. But I'm certainly here to help people learn more about this and understand it and put it into effect, because it's so effective. You'll just run with it from there. You'll go, it worked here. It's going to work here and here and here. And so I'm out there to help people to walk through this.
So, folks out there, if you love watching the light bulb come on above your horse's head, stop by AskShauna.com and page through the questions that have already been answered. And if you have more questions about something that's been answered and you're still curious about other details, you can ask Shauna right there. And you can also listen to Shauna with tips over there on Horse Tip Daily. She stops by regularly and fills us in. So, once again, thank you very much, Shauna. I'm going to give this little piece to a couple of the gals out at the barn who have chronic horses who yank, pull, tug, and tear the barn down. And we'll be seeing you here on Horses in the Morning next month.
Okay, that sounds great. Thank you so much, Jennifer, and Merry Christmas.
Happy
ho-ho-ho. Merry Christmas, Shauna.
Okay, bye, you guys. Thank you.
Bye.
All right. Our song today, thank you, Jennifer. Our song today is sponsored by FindAJudge.com. It's the free resource to find people to work at your shows. If you want to work, you know, if you're a judge and you want to work at more shows, this is the place to be listed because people will find you. All disciplines, all types of shows, it doesn't matter. FindAJudge.com is the online directory of horse show staff. It's a great little site. We want you to hop on over there and check it out. You know, that's one of the things when we were helping out with shows years ago, finding a judge is always the hardest part, and you got to call around, and you got to find somebody that's available, and it's tough to eat. You talk to somebody, and you get referrals. This makes it so much easier. You just go to findajudge.com. Check it out today. Well, today our song is by Shay, our listener, who is the fiddle player. So I was feeling like a little fiddle playing today, and we have their song by the Rigel Band called Vivid, and we're going to be back with the Victoria Spicer and of Horse and Country TV with the European Report. So this is Vivid. Thank you. Well, that was the Rigel Band. You can find them at rigel-band.com with our girl Shay on the fiddle there. And if that doesn't get your blood going, I don't know what will this morning. You need more coffee. Well, you are listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn the Geek here with Jamie Jennings and my wife, Coach Jen, over there in the producer chair today. And this show is sponsored by Pfizer Animal Health, and we appreciate their support. I have an announcement to make. We would love, especially, you know, all of you out there, but our regular listeners who are constant contributors to the Facebook page, we would love to hear from you for our special Christmas episode that we're putting together for December the 23rd. And what we'd like you to do is call our voicemail line and leave a holiday message for your horse or your horsey friends out there, and we'll play it on the air on December the 23rd. So we do want to hear from you. It's very simple. You just call in and you leave a voicemail just like you would on anybody's phone. And the phone number is 270-803-0025, and we'll play your message for the whole horse world to hear. We have listeners now in dozens of countries, so get your message out to the world. We'd love to hear from you. Keep it short, keep it sweet, and wish your holiday wishes to anybody you would like. We would love to hear from you, and we'll play that on the 23rd. Well, Jamie, I think our guest is ready for the next segment.
Fantastic. And, of course, we have her on this time every single week. And we've got Victoria Spicer from horseandcountry.tv. Victoria, good morning.
Good morning to you both.
Well, I guess it's good afternoon to you. See, I need to get it right because you're talking to her from jolly old England. And, now, obviously, lots kind of heating up for the holidays. You guys have a lot of stuff going on. I've been reading your Facebook page. And how are you ready for Christmas yet?
Not at all. I've done a little bit of Christmas shopping, but I don't feel very organized and I don't feel very festive. But pretty much as soon as I get off.
We can help you with that.
That would be good. But pretty much as soon as I'm off the radio, I'm going into a big horse show called Olympia in London, where they have Christmas displays and loads of shops. And so I guarantee that every year Olympia will get me in the festive spirit.
Well, I like your honesty. Are you? I'm not organized. I'm not in the spirit. I don't really care. But I'm going to go to a horse show, and it'll make me feel better. Tell us about the Olympia Horse Show. What is that?
It's a huge indoor show right in the middle of Kensington in London. So a really kind of smart part of London. And suddenly all these horses descend once a year. And tonight is dressage, and tomorrow is the dressage freestyle. And then after that, there's about 5 days of show jumping, and then there's displays and Christmas parade, and everybody sings a carol. And there's lots of kind of fun events as well. So it's always a really good show. It's probably one of my favorite shows of the year.
Oh, that's cool. And Glenn, are you so jealous of all the awesome stuff that she has over there in Europe all the time?
So many cool things. Like they have so many cool horse shows that just last forever. And because the country is relatively small, you can get to it.
Yeah,
we can.
Absolutely. Well, now moving on to talk about one of the people in eventing that has had just a fairy tale year. We're talking, of course, about Mary King, who this year, Rolex in our country, came in first and second place in the Rolex 3-day event. Is just impossible to even think about. Well, she just celebrated something. Tell us about that.
She did. I think a couple of months ago we spoke about her winning the HSBC FEI Classic Series, which netted her $150,000, which is quite a nice little bonus for any rider. And then she's just found out recently that she not only has won that, she's got an additional $50,000 for heading the HSBC rankings. So basically, she has been the most successful rider in the world this year and, got an extra, a bonus payment for it.
Yeah, man, it's like the rich just get richer, you know what I mean?
Well, I think of all the riders, Mary King is kind of someone who's really just built her way up from, you know, humble beginnings. She didn't have ponies when she was growing up. She begged for rides, and when she set up a yard, it was in an old disused farm, and she kind of built some stables there and has gradually built up to her facilities over the years. And she's not kind of one of these riders who has got millions everywhere she looks and has always had everything she wanted. And I think she just really deserves it. And she is 50 now, so I think that she's still performing incredibly well and looking a likelihood for the Olympic selection. And I think aged 50, that's quite impressive.
She has been on the. I was just going to say she's been on the Eventing Radio Show a few times here on the Horse Radio Network, and if you haven't heard those episodes, go back and take a listen to them because what you just said comes across that she's pretty humble and you know she did it the hard way. So
she did indeed.
I'm happy for her.
She's one of the nicest riders.
She seems to be that way. Just listening to interviews with her and when you know at Rolex we were doing some of the press conferences and she was awesome. And she breeds these horses. These are her homebreds that she's winning these competitions on. To me, it's not like she walked around and just plucked, you know, bought the advanced horse down the street that's going to go to the Olympics. She actually makes them, breeds them, trains them, and gets them the whole way. So she's absolutely an awesome person, and she's just had just a fairy tale storybook year, and we couldn't be happier for her, definitely. Definitely.
Really deserves it. And I think her daughter is 15 and she's going to be just as good as her mum, I think, if this year's results are anything to go by. She's definitely going to be chasing her tail in a few years' time and catching up with her mum, I think.
Yeah, that's cool. now, yeah, well, let's talk a little bit about getting in the holiday spirit, Victoria, because there's something on your website that how are you not in the holiday spirit with having this section on your website? Tell everybody what about the blog of the week and the horses and ponies. And Glenn, you're going to want to go look at this because there's tons of greyhounds.
Oh, I'm going to look.
This week we asked our Facebook fans to send in pictures of their horses and ponies and their dogs if they so wanted, all dressed up in their Christmas gear. We have a little pony with a full-on Santa outfit including a beard, and my favourite thing about that photo is the little girl that's leading the pony is dressed up as a fairy, and if you look in the background it's quite obviously a nice sunny day, so I think she dressed up in festive gear in probably about July. If you're going to get a sunny day in England, it probably was quite a while ago. And yes, we're loving the dedicated Christmas effort there at one of the summer shows. But yeah, we've just got lots of antler reindeer horns going on horses' heads, which must confuse them a little bit, but it's very sweet.
Is there any better way to dress up anything rather than have it be a miniature? Mini horses dressed as Santa Claus with the beards and Mrs. Claus. There's just nothing cuter than that. I swear.
No. Definitely. It's really nice to see. And we've had everything from tiny little Shetland ponies to we've got a Clydesdale with tinsel on his bridle and his reins. So, yeah, it's nice to see that size is no object when it comes to which horse you can dress up for Christmas.
Well, that's
Glenn,
cool. I'm looking at the greyhound pictures here too, and they're really cute. You know what this means? I'm going to have to go out and dress up the mini donkey. I'm going to have to do it, Jamie. I have to put Christmas clothes on the mini donkey. He doesn't need a beard. I think he's already got one of those.
We horses definitely want to see pictures of this. We'll add the donkey to the gallery.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
I'll bet that he
can. You should. It's cute. So everybody, please go to horseandcountry.tv and take a look at that, and then go ahead and catch us up to date on what's coming up on your channel.
Well, those of you who are in the UK can watch a really good documentary program this week, which is about Alex Watian, who he's known as One in a Billion because he is the only three-day eventer to represent China in the Olympics, and so, as you can imagine, he got quite a lot of press interest from China when he competed in Beijing. And he's a really charming man. He's quite young. I think he's 19 or 20 or something. And so this is a documentary all about him and how he became involved in horses and his career. So definitely watch that. That's on tomorrow night at 6 p.m. in the UK. And for our viewers over the pond, we've got a couple of really good programs on HRTV this week, including a program about famous show jumper Eddie Mackin, who won the Hickstead Derby a number of times. And we've also got a documentary about raining called This Is Raining. So do check those out. And if you head to hrtv.com, you can find out when they'll be showing.
Well, everybody, please definitely go check that out. And Victoria, as always, it is so lovely having you on. I hope you get in the holiday spirit after going to Olympia and have a good time. Soak it up, girl.
I will indeed. I'm looking forward to it.
If that doesn't work, we recommend large quantities of eggnog.
I've been drinking eggnog lattes. I don't know if you have those over in the States, but in Britain, there's a whole kind of range of Christmas coffees, and I had an eggnog latte last week, so that was very nice.
Well, there you go.
See, I don't do the eggnog, but I do have, every morning I make myself the peppermint coffee, and then I have to put some hot chocolate in it, and that's my kind of ghetto version of the peppermint mocha. Peppermint coffee with some chocolate in it. Oh, so good. Every morning, it's like Christmas.
Well, thank you, Victoria. Right. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Talk to you next week. Bye-bye. She's just delightful.
I know. She is delightful. She sounded like she was having a bit of a rough day today. With that accent of hers, I'm just going to listen to it all day long. I just let you do the talking because I'm just listening.
I know. Mm-hmm. I love to listen to her, too. Go ahead.
I have a couple sayings for you that I was wondering if you knew where they came from. And I thought this was interesting. I found an article in a newspaper in Oregon, Portland, that I thought was interesting. It sort of relates to horses here. The saying, put them on ice. You've heard that old expression, right? It's success.
Put them on ice?
Put them on ice, which basically means that whatever you're talking about has an unfavorable conclusion, that things aren't going to go too well. Well, that saying came back from the days when they did pre-embalming. This is kind of a fun, a little morbid story. Pre-embalming days when they had the old horse-drawn hearses. And I saw this in the hearse we saw at the auction we went to here recently, in the horse-drawn hearse. There's a door underneath where the casket goes, and we couldn't figure out what that door was for. They put ice in there. The door was to put ice because they didn't embalm people, so they had to keep the bodies cool. They put ice in it, and so that's where the term put him on ice came from. Now, there was a comment in here. They said, imagine if you were, and they used to parade through town, you know, when people died. They'd take the carriage down through town and everything. They said, imagine when you'd see the carriage coming through town with liquid dripping out of the bottom of it. That was probably disturbing to some. So here is. And dashing through the snow, do you know where that came from?
Dashing through the snow in one horse open sleigh.
That's exactly right. That's exactly where it came from. And the reason it came from that is that sleighs have that thing in the sleigh that, you remember, that swooping thing that comes up front and then curls over? That is called a dashboard in the sleigh. And that's where the term dashboard came from for automobiles. And the dashboard was the thing on a sleigh that kept the road debris and the salt and the, you know, all of the snow and every ice from hitting you in the face, and kept it out of the compartment that you sat in, and that was called a dashboard, and that's why I got the term dashing through the snow. So there's my bit of trivia for today.
Wow, I feel smarter now just knowing all that. Well, I'm all out of news for you because we've got Rapid Redo racing today, and that's pretty much what I'm going to spend the rest of my day doing. It is another cold and rainy day here in Phoenix, Arizona. It's consistently sunny and 75, and yesterday we flooded. The good news is it's like free water, and the other good news is I'm hoping that some of the gophers have been flooded. Is that too much to ask for?
for some reason, why don't they drown? Why do they never drown? You flood your fields on a regular basis there.
Yeah, and you know what they do? We just noticed is they actually go under the fence and they pop up new holes just outside our fence. And the problem is that they dig these tunnels underneath the fence and then up on the other side. Well, guess is what happens to our fence. It is currently at about a 45-degree angle.
They dug out the underpinnings of your fencing. Oh, no.
Oh, so now we have fence repair to do at the same time. I'm so irritated. And then it's like just so they can just let me know that we're getting nowhere with this whole gopher poisoning thing, the largest pile of gopher mound dirt ever spotted, I think, in the history of pocket gophers is in my field directly in the middle of it, right where I galloped down past. I didn't think there was any gopher holes there. Well, they made one.
I think your husband, after listening to you bitch about this every day, is really going to go for an exemption about using the F-16 and just strafing the whole place.
Wouldn't that be
about
nice?
Ready?
Go ahead. Just go ahead and bomb it, baby.
I feel sad for you because this is your first farm you bought, and I know you guys were so excited about this, and little did you know there would be a war going on in your backyard for the next 6 months.
No, I didn't know that either. I didn't know that gophers lived in the desert. And just when we bought the place, we were like, oh, the fence just kind of leans a little bit. We can fix that. Oh, whatever. We fixed it twice and it just falls right back over because there's nothing underneath it to hold it up. Oh, God, I'm so frustrated. But every time I take my little T-bar poison injector and I shove it into the ground and I feel that it goes into a gopher hole, it just makes me smile. So all they have to do is actually eat it, and then we'll be okay.
And you know, if people missed that episode, she had a professional gopher killer out, and he estimated that you have hundreds, if not thousands, of gophers. So you got to shove a lot of poison down there.
Yeah, I did it for 2 hours yesterday in the rain. I was like, I'm going to get you. I don't care if it's raining. That was the schedule, was to do gopher kill yesterday. And I'm like, I'm not letting you guys get away with this for a day.
Now, do you guys get a discount on your water allotment? You don't have to pay if you don't use it for a week?
No, well, we only pay for the time that we book.
Ah, okay. Got it.
So for those who don't know, we're on an irrigation system because we have no rain and we have grass. So we live on a series of canals, like these tiny pipes, I guess. And we sign up for, in our neighborhood, we sign up for an amount of time where we can have water and we flood our field. So during our allotted time, like say we get 6 to 10, and sometimes it's 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. Sometimes
you have to go out there?
No.
Is it automatic?
Yeah.
Or do you have to go out?
You have to go out and open your port to let the water come in, and then you have to go out and close your port to let the water come in. So it is tedious work, and I'm always nervous because if you screw it up, they can sue you. Like if your water damages somebody else's property, you can be in a lot of trouble. So I'm always a nervous wreck. I'm like, okay, I got to get out there, got to do the water. And I have like a stopwatch or a clock on, and I go to the second, and I open up my port, and I get the circ in the water. It's a little bit stressful. However, it works out, and we flood the field. But it does not drown the gophers. I don't know. I don't understand. They just dig into the next neighborhood and then neighbor's house, and then when we're done with our water, they just come right back.
I think they're doing surveillance. I actually think they have little bugs in your house. And they're down there. They got a couple of the gophers down there in the command center. And they're sitting in front of these little gopher consoles, watching you on little TV sets. And they're listening to every word you say, so they just know what you're going to do. They probably get this show every morning and just laugh. They're the ones in charge of the gopher coalition. They're actually buried underneath your yard there.
Yeah, I realize that. And I would just like to point out that we will be getting a gun because there's a lot of talk in the Flyover Farm family community of purchasing a gun along with several of Chad's fighter pilot buddies, and they just want to sit on our porch and drink beer and shoot gophers. But there's certain kind of guns you can fire in the neighborhood. And I'm like, Chad, this is all well and good. Go ahead, get a gun and start shooting gophers. But the problem is we've never seen one. Never seen one.
And the neighbors with the big house behind your farm probably wouldn't be too keen on having their house shot full of holes by a couple of drunk fighter pilots.
No, you don't understand. The whole neighborhood hates the gophers. I'm not the only one. So he's like, oh, the guy next to me was like, can you just have your husband vomit? No, everybody's frustrated. It is not just me. But the Gopher Coalition will be going down.
I like my C4 idea. I still think that was the best idea yet, but you guys didn't seem to want to do that one. So burn the sucker.
No, just blow things up. Yeah. Sounds good. Unbelievable.
All right, Jamie, let's call it a day. We'll be back again tomorrow. Don't forget to get your really bad ads into Jennifer. We have some great prizes this week that we'll announce tomorrow. So this is going to be the last really bad ads for this year. So get your ads in today. Just it take you 10 minutes. You can read the farming section of Craigslist for about 10 minutes and find 12 really bad ads. So send them to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com with really bad ads in the subject line, and we will be doing that on Friday as usual. And we have great guests lined up for tomorrow. Did you get the one book you were working on?
Yes, we are going to be talking with Jen Reutz from Three Chimneys Farm, because remember we talked a little bit about Three Chimneys. Actually, all the horses that are bred there, they will help find a forever home once the whole thing, their career is done. If they learn of one of their horses that was bred needing assistance, needing help, having a problem, they actually will take responsibility for a horse that they bred, which not many huge farms do. Of course, Three Chimneys was where Seattle Slough was. It's where Big Brown is. I mean, this is a high caliber facility that breeds thousands of horses a year, and they're doing it right. So we're going to talk to Jen from Three Chimneys. We'll talk to her at 9:30 tomorrow morning.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Jamie, and thank you for putting that together. Sounds like a terrific cause. Well, we'll see you tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., everybody, here at Horses in the Morning. Thank you to our sponsors today, Pfizer Animal Health and FindAJudge.com. We appreciate their support. Talk to you tomorrow, Jamie.
All right. Good luck, Rapid Redo. Thanks.